Steve. Good to be with you, Steve and Rob. That's cheap. I shouldn't have done that. I know how. I've done it a million times, so sorry about that, Tim. It's great to be back. I was actually here, a little smaller venue, Steve, last year when we did this. But this is really exciting to be here. You know, it's always the case when Pete read the introduction, I can always count on the line that in that introduction that always gets the most response. Rick and Karen are the parents of seven children. That always gets a ripple from the audience, even in this audience. I thought maybe not in this audience, it wouldn't get so much of a ripple. But you know, before I left those seven children and Karen, I told them that this was not just another speech for me. You know, the ones that you always think of when you're on the campaign trail and you sort of trot out your economic speech or your social conservative speech or your whatever speech. Yes, this is a group that is for faith and family and freedom. This is a group that means a lot to me because this is a group that I've been attached to the hip from for a lot of long years, working in the vineyards with people who stand for what America stands for. America, in my opinion, is a great moral enterprise. It is not just about creating wealth or military strength. It's more than that. My grandfather came to this country and brought my dad at the age of seven to this country. He didn't come here because he needed a job. He had a great job where he was in the country of Italy, worked on a postal train. But he saw my father as a brown shirt in Mussolini's youth corps. And he said that's not what he wanted for his children. And so he came to this country, and he worked. He worked until in the coal mines of western Pennsylvania until he was 72 years old digging coal. And I remember him very, very well. I'll never forget those powerful hands that he had. And he came here because he wanted to create the opportunity for his children not just to get rich, not just to, you know, be able to do whatever they wanted to do, but for my grandfather and for generations of Americans, America has been about doing what, as a lot of the speakers have talked about today, what our Declaration of Independence says, doing what God has created us to do, to follow His mission. America is not about great wealth or great power. America, the purpose of America is you. The purpose of America is to create an opportunity for each and every person blessed to be in this country to be able to live as they ought to live, as they were called to live. And we all shared values. America, I always say that if I went back into my father's home country of Italy and lived there for 50 years, I wouldn't be an Italian. But when my father came here and learned English in the second grade and was able to live and be an American, he was an American because he accepted America as the idea that it is. America is about an idea, and it has to be about shared value, or what is it? What is it? And that's why these moral issues that everyone says, oh, maybe we should set to the side and have a truce on. You can't. It is who we are. It is the purpose of our country. And I have been out fighting in the wars on these moral issues. And I can tell you, I just had a chance to speak to Rich Anderson, who is the chairman of the Judiciary Committee here in Iowa, just talking with him a few minutes ago. And he says, you know, we have been dealing with these marriage issues and abortion issues, and my goodness, is it tough. I've never been through the assault that I've been through over these last few days. I said, welcome to the club. It's one thing to stand up in front of a group and talk about all the things that you believe in. It's another thing to go out and lead and fight for those beliefs. For my children, they always thought, because I took the lead, as Pete talked about, on the partial birth abortion and so many abortion and family issues. It was one thing. I was a conservative. I voted conservatively. I was involved in all sorts of cutting spending, the Gang of Seven, you name it. I was the conservative. But it wasn't until I stood on the floor of the United States Senate, right next to Barbara Boxer, and for hour on end debated Barbara Boxer. There's a special place in heaven, I think, for me as a result of that, by the way. But when I would, after those debates, after I stuck my head out of the foxhole, my children, after reading the papers for years, used to think my first name was Ultra. Once you stick your head out on the social issues, once you fight for the moral fabric of our country, you're labeled. You're labeled. Oh, it doesn't matter that I was out working on welfare reform in 1996 and 97. In fact, I worked with Newt Gingrich and wrote the contract with America welfare reform provision when I was in the House of Representatives on the Ways and Means Committee. That doesn't matter that you were out and I was able to end a federal entitlement. I stood toe-to-toe with Daniel Patrick Moynihan, led the charge in 1995 and 96, ended for the first time, I think ever, a broad-based federal entitlement. And got 70 votes in the United States Senate, almost half the Democratic caucus. No, Ultra. Ultra. You can stand up and you can fight for health care reform, as I did. I worked with John Kasich, now governor of Ohio. We were the first to introduce a concept called medical savings accounts. And we pushed that forward to health savings accounts and developed a patient-centered approach to solving the problems of health care. And focused our energy on trying to change the Medicare system to try to make it more private sector oriented, as I did on the Finance Committee. No, Ultra. You can work on taking on, as I did in, after the events of 9/11, and focused in and tried to engage not just my colleagues in the Senate, but even the President of the United States on the war of ideas. The war of ideas, who we are at war with. One of the grave concerns I had when I ran in 2006 was that we're missing something. We didn't quite understand that we were losing the battle, not on the streets of Iraq back in 2006, but we were losing it here in America because the president didn't trust Americans enough to be able to tell them who this enemy is and why they want us destroyed. Was afraid to call them what they were. I gave a speech at the National Press Club in 2006 and said, this isn't a war on terror. Calling this a war on terror is like calling the World War II a war on blitzkrieg. We're at war with jihadists. We're at war with people who don't dislike us because what we've done. They hate us because of who we are. And they want to destroy us. And we need to lay that out for the American public and trust that they'll understand. Well, I took on that battle. And I continue to take on that battle. In fact, I spent the last 4 years traveling the country, talking about the threats. I worked in the last couple of years of my term in the United States Senate and passed the Iran Freedom and Support Act. And what was the focus of that act? To help the pro-democracy movement in Iran. To plant seeds in all of these Muslim countries that are ruled by dictators, that are opposed to us, to try to have a peaceful revolution where we could be helpful to them. And compare that to the strategies of this administration who sits silently by and watch as people died in the streets of Iran and we took the side of the mullahs, of the people who are developing nuclear weapons to threaten the world. Or we sat on the sidelines, in, as we do right now in Libya, when Gaddafi, who has attacked this country, and we do nothing to liberate a people. No, I'm Ultra. Why? Because I share your values and because I fought for them. Because I stood up on the floor of the United States Senate and offered the Partial Birth Abortion Act. And I didn't just offer it, but but I stood there and I fought day in, day out, not day in and day out, but year in, year out, 1996, 1997, 1998, 1999, year after year. We fought and we lost. We lost time and time again. Then we ended up losing in the court. We lost because Bill Clinton would veto the bill and we wouldn't have the votes, barely lost, to override the president's veto. But I continued to fight. I continued to stand up for life and God blessed us. How did God bless us? Well, for the first time since Roe versus Wade, back in the late 90s, something dramatic happened. As we were talking about partial birth abortion, remember what it was? It's a baby in the womb at least 20 weeks of gestational age with arms and legs and eyes and ears. It's a baby. And that baby was being delivered all but the head and then killed. And for the first time, the folks on the other side of this issue couldn't ignore that what was being killed was a baby. Because it was right there in the doctor's hands as the baby was almost delivered and then killed by the doctor. And for the first time since Roe versus Wade, attitudes in public opinion polls changed about abortion. And they continue to change. Why? Because we lost. Had Bill Clinton signed that bill in 1995 when we first passed it, no one in this room would have ever heard of a partial birth abortion, but he didn't. And God blessed us for fighting the fight. We continued, and we eventually got it passed, overruling, if you will, the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court said it was wrong. We passed a bill and said, you're wrong. And the first two sections of the bill said why they were wrong. And they went along with us, and now that procedure is banned. But more than that, we were blessed. We stood up and we fought for the Unborn Victims of Violence Act. What's that? That says that if a child is killed by someone who harms the mother and is killed or injured, then the law can treat that child as a child for purposes of criminal charges. You talk about a house divided against itself. How can we allow abortions and then charge someone for the crime for killing the same baby? It just depends whether the doctor's allowed to or not, has consent to or not. And then finally, the Born Alive Infant Protection Act. That's a very important piece of legislation that's going to be something I'm going to talk about a lot if I ever get down the road a year plus now to meet with the president. Because that was my bill that I authored in the Senate, and it was copied in all the other states. Everyone introduced their version of my bill, which said that if a child is born as a result of a, quote, botched abortion, then that child is entitled to medical protection and entitled to treatment. It's a pretty simple bill. To my knowledge in this country, there was only one person on the floor of any state legislature who stood up and opposed it. It happens to be the current president of the United States, who stood up and said that he opposed this bill because it would impinge on a woman's rights under Roe versus Wade, and said, in fact, that any child prior to 9 months of gestation would be able to be killed. Otherwise, it would impinge on Roe versus Wade. Think about that. Any child born prematurely, according to the president and his words, can be killed. Now, who's the extremist in the abortion debate? Who's the ultra in the abortion debate? We have an opportunity in this election to frame a great moral cause. Everybody wants to talk about the economy, and it's important. It's vitally important. It's vitally important to create jobs. It's vitally important to cut our deficits. It's vitally important to control the size and scope of government. It's vitally important to repeal Obamacare. But what's the mission? What's the what for? We have to paint a picture of an America that believes in you again. We have to paint a picture of an America where Americans believe in ourselves again. That's really what's going on here. I've referred to entitlement programs, Obamacare and the like, as a result of a conversation I had with Juan Williams in the green room of Fox. I used to work there, by the way. I was in the green room during the Obamacare debate. The president had just doubled down and decided to push forward and get this bill passed. Who cared about Massachusetts? Who cared what public opinion polls said? He was going to double down and have the House pass the Senate bill. And I saw Juan, and I said, Juan, what are you guys doing? You're going to destroy yourself in the election. The public is against what you're doing. You're trying to ram it down their throat. What are you doing? He said, well, let me tell you what my people tell me. You know, Reid, Pelosi, Obama, he gets their talking points. He said, this is what we believe. We believe that Americans love entitlements. And once we get you hooked on an entitlement, they'll never let it go. Sounds like nothing more than trying to hook someone like a drug dealer. And isn't that what entitlements do? Make you dependent, make you less, make you feel less, make you want less. If that is not a moral issue, if what we're doing to the next generation of America, this entitlement attitude, if that is not a moral issue, I don't know what is. We have an obligation. We have an obligation as Americans to do what my grandfather and my father did for me, which is to leave our country better than we found it. A lot of tough things going on in America right now, but I feel blessed to be here. I feel blessed to be here, and I hope you do too, to be here at a time when America needs you. We're at a crisis point around the world. We're at a crisis point here at home in our economy and our deficits and our culture. Every place is at a turning point and a crossroads. It's a crisis, but what a blessing. America needs you. And it doesn't need you to put a uniform on and go out and fight a war. It needs you to be what you're doing right here, to put your citizen cap on and go out and fight to make America, the country, at least as good, much better than what you were given. That is the blessing. And God will be faithful. If there's anything I learned from the wars that I fought in Washington, D.C., that if you are faithful to this great country that he blessed, he will be faithful to you. I'll close with a story of faithfulness. It was during the partial birth debate back in 1998. I had debated Barbara Boxer again 6 hours on the floor of the United States Senate. It was 8 o'clock at night, and I was just about to go home. The Senate was closing down, and I said, there was something inside me that said I needed to do more. We were 2 votes short. And I thought, well, maybe if I just stay on the floor and argue, maybe some senators or, you know, who don't have a life might be watching C-SPAN like some people are now. I mean, and maybe I can convince them to change their vote. So I went back in the cloakroom and I called my wife, Karen, and I said, Karen, we had, at the time, had 4 children. I said, Karen, you know, do you mind? I know it's late and I probably won't get home till after the kids are asleep, but I really feel called to do this. And she said what she always said, if that's what you feel God is calling you to do, then that's what you got to do. So I went back and told Mike DeWine, who was in the chair, was senator from Ohio, only be about 20 minutes. An hour and a half later, I finished the speech. I talked about these little children whose mothers and fathers had to fight to find a hospital so they could be born. It was easy. They could find places to be aborted, but they couldn't find a hospital where these disabled children who are the target of partial birth abortion, they couldn't find a hospital to be born. And I talked about these miracles. Well, we had the vote the next day and we lost. And I thought, what a failure. I'd gotten home too late to tuck the kids in. Karen was already asleep. I was a failure as a father, a failure as a husband. And then 5 days later, an email came. It came from a student from Michigan State University who said, a couple nights ago, I was clicking through C-SPAN and I saw you standing there talking about these children. And my girlfriend and I stopped and we watched. And as we watched, I noticed that tears were running down my girlfriend's face. And I asked her what's wrong. And she looked up to me and she said, I'm pregnant. And I have an abortion scheduled for next week. But I'm not going to have an abortion anymore. The young man went on and said, you didn't win that battle to overturn the president's veto, but you saved the life of my child. God will be faithful if you do your part and are faithful to his country. We will reclaim this land and we will make it greater and greater and greater. Thank you and God bless you.